Good afternoon. You're listening to KCBX in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. The show is Issues and Ideas. I'm Brian Reynolds, County Library Director, and I'm here today with two very famous poets from the county. Kevin Patrick Sullivan, who was Poet Laureate of the City and County in 2003 and 4, and James Cushing, who was the Poet Laureate for the county from 2008 to 2010. Kevin is a founder of Corners of the Mouth and co-founder of the San Luis Obispo County Poetry Festival, and Jim has taught English at Cal Poly since 1989, and he has a new book out entitled Pinocchio's Revolution. I should also mention that Kevin has a new book called Under Such Brilliance, issued by Word Palace Press. So, gentlemen, let's get started today with a little bit of a discussion about the history of poetry, how it has been important in people's lives, perhaps how it's changed and why it's important today. Who'd like to begin?
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, it's an enormous question. I think
exactly.
I think poetry begins with the knowledge that one is mortal. And I think we all have to, in some way, celebrate and protest that at the same time. And we have language that enables us to do that. And so we discover ourselves in the light of our mortality through our language. And with that language, we make the poem. At least that's my theory today. Kevin, do you have any theories about the origin of poetry?
Well, I believe it's something, as it goes, almost... I had a poem here, and it was, this is the beginning, breath also. But, of course, it's a memory as well. So it helps us celebrate our accomplishments. And like Jim was saying, it is that rage, as Dylan Thomas would say, against mm-hmm. the dying of the light. So poetry is important. It's been... Our conveyance for we didn't have libraries at first, but we had poetry.
Wouldn't you say, and we talked about this a little bit before going on the air, that in the pre-literate world, of course, pre-library world, that I think it's likely that poems and poetry, whether short or long, played a much bigger role in society because they were a way of communicating across space and time. Mm-hmm. You'd memorize a poem. It might be the news of the day. It might be a battle that had just been fought. It seems to me it was a proxy for memory, just like libraries play that role today.
The Homeric bards would recite their songs of the Iliad and the Odyssey that would go on for days. And the internal evidence of those poems suggests that there was no alphabet, no written technology available to them. It had to be entirely originated and maintained within memory.
Memorized by the poet.
Memorized, but perhaps memorized is the wrong word if by memorized you assume that someone is reading a text and repeating it over and over to himself, like the way you would memorize prayers or something. If there's no alphabetic writing, then poetry itself becomes a kind of library or becomes a kind of internet in which a civilization maintains and celebrates and keeps alive the information and traditions that are most important to it.
The storyteller, the voice that draws everyone close, that human sound.
That's right. And what is a person, after all, if not the story of his triumphs and failures and wishes and hopes?
Wow, I'm getting goosebumps. I'm imagining we're sitting in maybe around a campfire with someone reciting a poem, and there's someone on a drum or maybe a flute, and people are just mesmerized by the words, by the images. What a great thing. And certainly that appeal exists today.
Coachella.
Well, we just had Ken Waldman, the fiddling poet, in town recently, so I'm sure that was a I didn't see that particular show, but we've had him here for the festival in the past, and a fabulous experience with that music from the fiddle and his voice.
Yes.
I was talking to poet Brendan Constantine at the L.A. Times book fair at USC on Sunday, and he said that something he had read was illuminating to this conversation, that when asked what their experience of poetry is in terms of reading it for pleasure on a regular basis, something like 3 or 4% of those polled said that they do read poetry for pleasure on a regular basis. When asked how many of them had ever written poetry in order to make themselves feel better or express themselves or in high school or anything, it was between 75% and 80%.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. So there is a need that poetry is clearly serving to be able to formulate, to shape, and to remember intense moments of feeling.
Right, to articulate our lives.
To articulate it, and then those who stay with it to the level of art. Well, that's the difference between the 4 and this and the 74.
Right. It seems to me that a poem is like a sculpture with all the extraneous material removed, or like a perfume where it's been synthesized and distilled down to its barest elements. And because of that, each word, each phrase is powerful, is loaded with meaning. And that's quite an art form. And because the poet has put all that work into creating the verse, when the person reads it, it's almost like you smell a perfume and you're overwhelmed, because you read or hear a poem in just a few seconds. It might have taken a person hours or days to create. So it's like a rush, I guess. What do you think about that?
And it could be the poem itself is a rush as well. It is not always created over days or months or years. Sometimes over an instant that happens,
right.
You allow it to flow through. But of course, that in itself takes time to be able to let that happen, to step out of yourself, to step out of the way of yourself, and allow this poetry to happen. You know.
Wow, that's an interesting thing. It's like the poetry becomes the subject of the sentence, not the object. Do you think poetry should be spoken or sung as opposed to read?
You mean out loud or silently?
Yes.
Well, in terms of the way the art form has developed over the last 100 years, I think there are some poems that are meant to be spoken out loud and sung out loud, and some that that only work typographically on the page and I think that there is so much variety in the possibility of the art now that the primacy of the oral tradition is only one of the many options that are available within the art form. Carl Kempton, for instance,
is
very fond of highly sculpted visual poetry, which resists any kind of conventional reading or interpretation at all, and is specifically intended to resist such interpretations.
Wow, that's an incredible idea. I was listening to public radio a few years ago, and I heard a person reading poetry, and I didn't recognize the voice. And then attached to the reading was jazz piano, and I learned later it was Jack Kerouac and Steve Allen.
Mm.
And
oh,
I
famous
just,
performance, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just unbelievable power to that. And I imagine it must have been difficult to integrate the music and the poetry and
Well, Brian, in my experience, attempting to do some things like that with my own work, and in working with the Los Angeles-based jazz poet Michael C. Ford, I found that such interactions are rare, because what you need is two people whose intuitive artistic selves are naturally fitted toward each other. And once you have that, it can be easy. Kerouac and Steve Allen did not do a great deal of rehearsal for that performance, and its perfection is such that it resonates almost 50 years later. Kenneth Patchen also did some wonderful recordings with some jazz musicians, as did Lawrence Ferlinghetti. But when it works wonderfully, and when it doesn't, it's kind of an embarrassment. But that's because it's been forced instead of organically discovered. This is part of what I think that rush that you were talking about—the rush of serendipitous discovery of the beautiful or the real or the tangible within language.
That's so exciting, Kevin. Do you feel the same about that, or music and poetry together is a difficult, rare thing?
Well, I believe it can be, but it's also. The syncopation of the voice and the rhythms, if you know what you're doing, you can do it. I think I can – I have performed pretty cold with musical accompaniment, and I thought we've done a pretty good job with it.
That was because you and the musical accompanist had an intuitive connection.
Sure,
that was
exactly.
Already there.
Yeah, right.
You know, the same thing's happened with me. I did a poem – with Matt Ward on piano a few years ago, and we didn't rehearse.
Oh, yeah.
But we just naturally fell into something.
So now Lisa Kaufman is going to have some musical accompaniment on May 5th at a show she's going to be reading with.
And Lisa Kaufman is one of my favorite living American poets, and it's so great that we have her here in the Central Coast.
And she's has that ability to. Connect with her because these are friends of hers. So
right.
They'll be so that tie, that emotional, intuitive tie
connection.
That Jim is talking about, she's already established.
I'm a big jazz fan, and one of my ideas about it or theories about it is that the musicians who are good at that are so good technically and have practiced their craft so much that when they sit down or sit in, even with strangers, they can create art because they are so good and they can blend and spark off each other. And I'm sure a good poet and a good musician could do that. If you look at old movies like I do, you can see, the beatniks and the bongo drums and somebody maybe reciting a poem. But I'll bet in reality it didn't happen that much because it was, like you say, hard to do, hard to bring off and have it be a good experience. Mm-hmm. I have a thought or a question, and it relates to youth and how they might know about poetry or enjoy poetry or be introduced to poetry. Mm-hmm. In the world of libraries, a lot of the better fiction for youth cover themes and experiences that are pretty raw, like coming of age sexually or family crises or accidents that might happen to a friend of a friend. And for that reason, some children's or youth authors are banned. Or there's a recent movie out about bullying that they're trying to get an R rating taken away so that the kids themselves can actually see the movie. Do you have any thoughts about poetry and young people and how to make that connection?
Well, that unfortunately, sometimes poetry is taught or something in a classroom but maybe that was the old rule anymore because there are such things as California poets in the schools nowadays. And then not only that, but there's also our current poet laureate, actually, Bonnie Young, and others get into classrooms and bring their love of poetry from the kindergarten all the way up. In fact, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be visiting C.L. Smith School and leading little workshops with the first, second, and fourth graders, and Rosemary Wilford's going to do the fifth and sixth grade. And anyway, so there are involvement bringing poetry to the students. And as we say, all the children are poets, and all of the children are artists mostly. I mean, because mm-hmm. and then, you know, what happens is we get all that stuff trained out of us. Mm-hmm. We get told all the time, and we get, you know, put in that box that our parents want us to become or society wants us to become. Everybody has this idea of who we are or who you should be. You know, and poetry is one of those things that helps you escape those boxes because, like you were talking earlier, it helps you discover yourself, you know. And so in order to discover yourself, you start pushing that envelope, that boundary. You start telling yourself who you are instead of listening to others, you know.
I teach a creative writing class at Cal Poly every quarter. And I always ask my students what their experience is with contemporary poetry before they come to the class, and the vast majority of them have been exposed to some sort of creative writing exercise in elementary or middle school, but there isn't a whole lot of follow up to that. It tends to be an isolated elementary or middle school experience, which is sad in a way because it means they're out of practice, but which is also useful because elementary and middle school is still close enough to childhood to evoke some of that childhood spontaneity that makes children such natural poets and natural artists. The other thing that we need to say because there's so much exposure to it from young people is the so-called slam poetry movement, which involves some rap or hip-hop-like performers, men and women, whose subject matter can be every bit as harsh and violent and nasty as some of these prose writers, My own work has very little to do with the slam poetry tradition. I try to tell my students that I have complete respect for it. It is primarily a kind of theater, and I think we can make a distinction and have to make a distinction between poetry as a theatrical performance and poetry as a private reading experience. They're different buzzes. They're different lights. They're different thrills.
Yeah, I enjoy going to art museums in the big cities, especially like Chicago or L.A., and I'm convinced that every painter or sculptor has in mind what they want the viewer to see, but that also includes not just intent but a certain light or a certain distance from the work that they're having imagined that it would be shown off ideally, and I'm probably – the youth and the poets need to figure that out too.
Of course, that's the limiting thing, though, because the artist or the poet or whoever, they have their preconceptions of what they're doing because they know, I mean, what they're trying to put across. But then the viewer or the listener, they bring a whole totally different set of experiences to whatever it is put across. And so they are going to interpret it their own way, which I think is one of the most beautiful things about art, you know, that it is not static. It's not just
– Well, in a way, it's incomplete, and the reader or the listener completes it through their own vantage point. Makes sense. Well, what we'd like to do for the remainder of the show is have you read some of your poems. But could we, before we get into that, talk a little bit about some of the events that are going on? Or have gone on so people know?
Well, as you know, Thursday, April 26th, out in the Los Osos Library, Poets on the Edge, a local critique group, host along with the library staff out in Los Osos, Margaret C. Lang and Ivan Braunotter. That's at 7 p.m. Thursday, the 26th. And that's a quarterly reading, by the way. So they do one with the fall, winter, spring, the seasons, you know. And then May 5th at 7 p.m., the Nautical Bean for the first Saturday of the month, Poetry at the Bean at 7 p.m., Jasmine Marshall Armstrong and Lisa Kaufman, who I was saying will have some musical accompaniment. And that's also followed by an open reading. May 13th up in Morro Bay at the Coalesce Book Wedding Chapel at 7 p.m., there's a featured and open reading. May 17th, the third Thursday's Poets Night Out at St. Elizabeth's Church in Atascadero at 7 p.m. Patty Sullivan, my darling wife, beautiful artist, wonderful poet, and myself will be the featured readers. And the open reading to follow. May 20th, that's the Corners of the Mouth show at Linnea's Cafe here in San Luis Obispo, held there every third Sunday of the month since 1984. We'll feature Jackie Berger from San Francisco. Oh, she's fabulous. She read just this past poetry festival. George Wallace from New York City. And he's great. He runs right now. He's the current editor for the Walt Whitman, the Long Islander, Walt Whitman's Corner. And then, of course, our own Kevin Clark, who teaches over at Cal Poly, your colleague and a great friend of mine, a wonderful poet. So that's the 20th. And then down in the Royal Grande on May 27th at the Slowdown Pub at 5 p.m., on the fourth Sunday of the month, there's always a featured and open reading as well. So, you know, and like I say, these things happen. We have, what, 5 monthly reading series here in our county. So, and then there's, you know, other things are happening as well. You know, so.
Tremendous. That is so exciting. Let's move on to some actual readings. Jim, do you want to begin? Are you ready for that?
This is from the introduction to Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. A great poem is for ages and ages in common, and for all degrees and complexions, and all departments and sects, and for a woman as much as a man, and a man as much as a woman. A great poem is no finish to a man or a woman, but rather a beginning. Has anyone fancied he could sit at last under some due authority and rest satisfied with explanations and realize and be content and full? To no such terminus does the greatest poet bring. He brings neither cessation or sheltered fatness and ease. The touch of him tells in action. Whom he takes with firm, sure grasp into live regions previously unattained. Thenceforth is no rest. They see the space and ineffable sheen that turn the old spots and lights into dead vacuums. The companion of him beholds the birth and progress of stars and learns one of the meaning. Now there shall be a man cohered out of tumult and chaos. The elder encourages the younger and shows him how. They too shall launch off fearlessly together till the new world fits an orbit for itself and looks unabashed on the lesser orbits of the stars and sweeps through the ceaseless rings and shall never be quiet again.
Wow.
That is the voice of American poetry. That is the voice that I hope my own voice is worthy of harmonizing with.
I got goosebumps, that's for sure. Kevin.
Kevin, it's terrible that you have to follow that. I know. Well, I know.
This will be Philip Levine.
Okay. Okay.
The current United States Poet Laureate from his collection of poems called What Work Is, which was the winner of a National Book Award.
A wonderful, wonderful book, by the way. I can oh, totally yeah. endorse this book belongs on your library.
Now, this is what work is. We stand in the rain in a long line, waiting at Ford Highland Park for work. You know what work is. If you're old enough to read this, you know what work is, although you may not do it. Forget you. This is about waiting. Shifting from one foot to another, feeling the light rain falling like mist into your hair, blurring your vision, until you think you see your own brother ahead of you, maybe 10 places. You rub your glasses with your fingers. And of course, it's someone else's brother, narrower across the shoulders than yours, but with the same sad slouch, the grin that does not hide the stubbornness, the sad refusal to give in to rain, to the hours wasted waiting. And of course, that goes on. It's a marvelous little poem.
It's a commentary on events of today, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. And I also brought a Juan Felipe Herrera, who's the current state poet laureate for California. And I'll read a little excerpt from his book, Border Crosser with a Lamborghini Dream. This is from Jute Boy at the Naturalization Derby. In the Chevy sack, mottled and sharp, lean boy to the ride, did you draw out your hoodoo literature, the bone for itself? Remember the riff bone, the one from the goddess shank, and the graffiti frame, the self-portrait, longing and philosophical? Was that you in low Tucson hoisting another flame? Stole it. You did, in your reflex for passion, in your arsonist, lazy fourth eye, the one next to the ear. Juan Felipe Herrera, he's great. We're so lucky to have him as our current poet laureate.
Wow. Okay, we've got just a couple more minutes. Who would like to go next?
Well, why not have some more Walt Whitman? This is from Song of Myself, the 1855 edition. I am of old and young, of the foolish as much as the wise. Regardless of others, ever regardful of others. Maternal as well as paternal. A child as well as a man. Stuffed with the stuff that is coarse, and stuffed with the stuff that is fine. One of the great nation, the nation of many nations, the smallest the same, and the largest the same. A southerner soon as a northerner, a planter nonchalant and hospitable. A Yankee bound my own way, ready for trade, my joints the limberest joints on earth and the sternest joints on earth. A Kentuckian walking the vale of the Elkhorn in my deerskin leggings, a boatman over the lakes or bays or along coasts, a Hoosier, a Badger, a Buckeye, a Louisianan or Georgian, a Pokesy from sandhills and pines, at home on Canadian snowshoes or up in the bush, or with fishermen off Newfoundland, at home in the fleet of ice boats sailing with the rest and tacking, at home on the hills of Vermont, in the woods of Maine or the Texas ranch, comrade of Californians, comrade of free Northwesterners, loving their big proportions.
Wow, I got an echo of Woody Guthrie, and this land is your land, and certainly Walt Whitman was the poet of America of the time, and mm-hmm. I went through the Civil War and covering all those places. I would like to thank both of you for being here today.
You're welcome, Brian.
Former poet laureates of the county, James Cushing and Kevin Patrick Sullivan.
Well, thank you.
I'm Brian Reynolds, the county library director, and you've been listening to KCBX in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. Our show is Issues and Ideas.